Good morning, and thank you for joining us here on the Coffee Table this Wednesday, November the 11th, 2015. This is our recurring holiday bookworm show. We have with us Dana Stabenow. Hi, Dana. Happy Veterans Day.
Oh, thank you, Quentin. Back at you.
And we also have Terry Renzel, our program director here at KBBI, joining in. He's a bookworm in his own right, as some of you already know.
Good morning.
So, Dana, first I'm wondering if you can just kind of introduce yourself, talk a little bit about you, why you're on the show here, and oh, don't give me that. But just for our listeners who aren't familiar with your name.
I'm Dana Stabenow. I'm best known for the K-Chiak novels, but right now I'm writing historical fiction. The third one just came out, Friday before last, I think. Yeah, The Land Beyond. Terry's nodding. Yeah, it's all about Marco Polo's granddaughter traveling the Silk Road west between the years 1322 and 1327.
That sounds very interesting. What made you want to go into that particular subject?
Well, I read The Travels of Marco Polo once and never recovered and decided. And, you know, he was in China for 20 years. And if you ever read any version, any Bowdlerized version of his memoirs, of his book, you realize that he really loved the ladies. And you can't tell me he didn't scatter some seed around while he was there. So I just thought it would be interesting to postulate the existence of a granddaughter.
Absolutely. Well, great. And you also have a couple of other series out that some of our listeners are already familiar with, wondering, you have the Kate Shugak series. Mm-hmm. I'm not very familiar with your work, so I'm going to do that full disclosure.
Stab me to the heart!
So sorry. But you have the Kate Shugak series, Liam Campbell, others that you've done.
Well, I wrote a couple of thrillers that were set on, I did two ride-alongs with the Coast Guard. I did a ride-along in the Bering Sea with them in 2004 in February, and another ride-along on an EPAC, Eastern Pacific Patrol, in 2007. And I got two books out of it. So I wrote thrillers set on Coast Guard cutters in both those novels.
All right. Well, there you go.
And science fiction. I've written three science fiction novels, which fell with an almighty thud on the marketplace and were never heard from again.
There you have it. If anyone wants to check those out, that's absolutely. See, I'm doing something. So we are going to kind of go into some of your favorite books, Terry's favorite books, some of the books I've read, some of my favorites, and hopefully we're going to have some fun. So I'm wondering if you have any books that you'd just like to throw out there that you've read this year that you just think were awesome?
Well, as a matter of fact, since you asked, I have a list here in front of me, and I have stars by two of them. A book that I just recently read is called The Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande. That's a name that a lot of Homerites are going to be familiar with because I think they just had it as a book club selection at the library, one of his books called, his most recent book called Being Mortal, that has provoked quite the community-wide conversation. This is a different book by him. You'll recognize his byline from The New Yorker. He's a really good, really accessible writer. He's a doctor, a medical doctor, a surgeon. And this book called The Checklist Manifesto is a riveting story about how he came to develop a checklist for the operating room that goes back to the first checklist for aviation ever written by Boeing in the 1930s when they were building the B-17. And his thrust is that modern life and modern technology has become so incredibly complicated. It's not because people are stupid. It's not because they're inattentive. It's not because they're not good at their job. It's just that the job has become so incredibly complicated that you have to have checklists to be able to do it properly. And he noticed that in the OR that they were having way too high statistics on people getting infections after operations. And this was because giving the antibiotic at the right time in the proper amount was falling by the way, because it was so automatic that unless you had a checklist, people would forget to do it too much of the time. I mean, it wasn't a really high percentage, but for him, as a surgeon, as a medical professional, it was too high. So he comes up with the idea of doing a checklist. He noticed that there are checklists in other professions, like there's construction going on in his hospital. And so he goes over and he noticed that the construction guys have two checklists. One is things getting done, and the other is a checklist of making sure everybody in the process is alerted to what's going on. So he makes a chess list. He makes a checklist for the OR, and he tries to implement one day in the OR, and it's just an abysmal failure. It's too long. It's too complicated. Everyone in the OR hates it, including the patient who's laying there, you know, while they're going through the checklist, waiting for them to get the operation on the road. So then he goes to the checklist factory, and he talks to a guy named Borman at Boeing, who is in charge of making checklists for all the Boeing aircraft. The guy throws him into a flight simulator, and this is a guy I don't think who's ever been on anything smaller than a 737 and is not a pilot. And by using the checklist, when the guy throws an in-flight emergency at him, he is able to actually land the simulator successfully after the guy throws him an in-flight emergency on takeoff. So then he gets all kinds of advice from Boeing, and he goes back and he rewrites the checklist and he tests it out, and he gets the World Health Organization to underwrite a test of his checklist at 8 different hospitals all over the world, from Tanzania to UW, and does all kinds of exit interviews with the bottom line is it actually improves the survival rate, the non-infection rate after the surgery. But it's hard to get people to implement a checklist because ego is involved. You know, surgeons are the gods of the operating room. And it's, you know, he said still 20% of the people it was difficult. It's too complicated and it takes time away from the operation. Then they asked another question. They asked the OR teams that had come out of the operations using this checklist, if you were on the table, would you rather be in the OR with the checklist or without? And 93% of them said they wanted to be in the OR room with the checklist. Mm-hmm. So this is just a very brief preface of the book, but it is fascinating reading. There's a lot of other stories that, of course, I don't have time to go into on the air, but this is one of those books that's going to go on my shelf. It's going to stay on it permanently. If I want somebody else to read it, I'll buy them a copy because I'm hanging on to mine, because this is something I think you can go back in and reread and have even more fun with the second time around. It's really, really good.
No, that's, as you said, that's a brief little summary, but you have me hooked.
Excellent. I'm the world's worst proselytizer of books, as Terry knows. Another one on the hook. Excellent. The other book that I would really like to recommend is, this is a little odd now, okay, so just work with me, guys. It's a graphic novel series. It's called Ms. Marvel. It's about a 16-year-old girl in Jersey City who happens to be, number one, a Muslim, and number two, a superhero.
I've heard of this book.
They are so good, Quentin. They are so good. I'm 63 years old and I love these books. And I thought, well, maybe it's just me. So I sent copies to my 18-year-old niece who's in college, and I said, read these and tell me what you think. She loved them. She thinks they're addictive. And one of the great things about these books is they stand stereotypes totally on their head. Her parents are, you know, she's not quite the girl that she once was. And of course, her parents notice and her brother notices. And so they're wondering what's wrong with her. And they're thinking, oh, my God, you know, she's just going to hell the shortest way possible. And they're all nervous. And so they send her off to speak to her imam, the priest of her mosque, and she's thinking, oh, Lord, he's going to just lower the religious boom on her and just say that she's a bad daughter. And, you know, she's just expecting the worst. He turns out to be this sensible, sane, supportive individual and gives her very good advice. I have goosebumps just saying this. I mean, the stereotypes are just upended in this series. The art is excellent, and a lot of times in graphic novels, the art is so bad, it really just turns me off. That doesn't happen here. Plus, if you're a Marvel nerd, there's all kinds of walk-ons, like Wolverine shows up in the first book, you know, that'll thrill everybody.
Wow.
You know, and of course, Kamala Khan takes a selfie with Wolverine. And the art is really imaginative, too. There's this one page I remember where Ms. Marvel and Wolverine have to climb out of the sewer. And it's all one page. And they climb from level to level to level in this single cell that covers the whole page. And they're having conversational balloons all the way up. It's easy to follow. It's striking to the eye. It's on every level, these books are terrific. I think they are the perfect Christmas gift for pretty much any kid in your life from age 8 to 80. And Claudia Haynes tells me that they have them down at the library.
Oh, not anymore.
Oh, well.
What do you think, Terry? Would you go for Marvel Girl?
You know, that sounds interesting. I mean, I'm not a graphic novel person. I mean, Dana knows this. We've been doing this show for, you know, a while now. I'm not into the young adult stuff, even though she did put me on the Hunger Games several years ago. So yeah,
kicking and screaming.
and I thank you for that, by the way. So yeah, it sounds like something I might want to check out.
Give it a try. Yeah. They have them on sale at the Homer Bookstore too.
Get out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, exactly. What Quentin said.
So Dana, you do this often. Make recommendations. I've heard from Terry you have an impeccable record as far as giving out recommendations, making people want to go get the books that you say they should get. And he says you're pretty spot on. How do you do that?
Well, maybe I just have, I probably shouldn't say this. I don't think I have really elevated tastes. I think my tastes are in popular, strongly rooted in popular fiction, because I was raised across the bay in Seldovia. We lived on a boat, a 75-foot fish tender, while I was growing up off and on for 5 years. And everybody was broke back then. You know, you either got books out of the library, or basically what you read was popular fiction that was in paperback books. This was like back in the Stone Ages when they only cost like 50 or 60 cents. And everybody had paperback books in their boat cuddies to read, you know, in between fishing periods. And you'd trade with other boats and with other, in the wintertime, if you were going around, you'd stop in at a cannery and visit with the caretaker and they'd trade books with you. And all I ever read was, you know, stuff that got mass market stuff that, you know, they printed billions of copies of, so they wound up in boat cuddies in, you know, South Central Alaska. So that's the way my tastes were formed. I was not raised reading Faulkner I'm not the literary type. And then later on in my life, I thought, you know, I haven't read any of the award winners. I should start reading some Pulitzer and some, I forget what the book award is over in England. Booker.
Yeah, I was going to say the Man Booker.
Yeah, Man Booker Prize. And, you know, and I started reading those books, and I hated almost every one of them. God, they just seemed to me to be so exclusive. It's like, okay, if you can't understand this, then you're not worthy of reading it. And I thought, okay, fine, I'll go back to reading popular fiction. So that's what I read. And I think, you know, mostly I'm interested in a good story. I want a strong narrative line that thumps in the background like the bass guitar in a band. And if you don't have that, you don't have me.
Gotcha. So, popular fiction, things that just about anybody can get into, basically. You think that's why you have so much success? Well, rumored success.
I've been really, really fortunate to have, you know, a minimal amount of skill at creating good characters that people want to read. I've been really, really fortunate in that respect.
Well, just so you know, I wasn't taking shots at you. I was
I
was talking about your recommendations, not your books.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But
it's all about me.
We're going to go ahead and open up our phone lines now. So we have, if you want to call locally, you can call 907-235-7721. And Terry, what's that number for the toll-free call?
1-800-979-5224.
All right. 979-5224.
And actually, I'm going to take advantage of having my microphone on and jump in here, Dana, talking about award winners. A series of books I read this summer, Edmund Morris's trilogy on Theodore Roosevelt, The Rise of Theodore Roosevelt, which he won a National Book Award for. I believe it was National Book Award back in 1979 when he published that. And then Theodore Rex and Colonel Roosevelt. Theodore Rex was about TR's presidency, Colonel Roosevelt, his post-presidency life. It was over 20 years between the first book and the second book. And I noticed just how different Morris's writing style changed, how much it changed, how much it evolved between those two books.
Oh.
And I thought the second and third books were much better written, more well written. That's horrible English, I know.
We got it.
Between them. And it's like, and he won an award for the first book, but not the second or third. But I thought the second and third were better written.
Interesting.
I remember one time I went and I read all of Ed McMahon's books straight through the 87 Precincts. They're a crime fiction series set in, they're the, probably the best police procedurals, in my opinion, ever written. And again, you know, he wrote, these are like popcorn. I don't mean, they were extremely well written. I don't mean to say that they were, you know, just a cheap snack. but
You couldn't stop reading them. That's what you meant.
No, and I've read a couple of them. And then I thought, you know, this is worth reading all of them. So I went and I collected the whole, there are a lot of them. And I read them all from beginning to end. And you know what? He was like 20 or 25 books in until he wrote what I consider to be, you know, one of the perfect books. I think it's Ice is what it's called. And he also improved as a writer. I have to tell you, that was, as a writer myself, that was very heartening. I mean, if Ed McBain had a learning curve, then Dana Stavno could have a learning curve too. It was very heartening, I felt.
And do you notice that in you know, other work, what Terry was saying actually, in other authors, that you know they might have a few books that they've written earlier that are just, in your mind, astounding, and then you find another book that they write later on, you're just like, it doesn't do the same thing for me.
The reverse is also true. They can, you know, that's why I'll always give an author a second chance, because maybe I didn't like their first book as much, maybe I didn't think it was as well written, but they deserve at least another chance from me. So yeah, in answer to your question though, Quentin, many times, you know, because a lot of times there are a lot of authors that labor for a long time in obscurity before they are published, and they have a tendency to throw everything they have into that first book because they think it's going to be their only chance. Mm. And I know a lot of booksellers have told me that the second book in a series is always the hardest one to write and the hardest one to sell.
Gotcha. Because you have to keep that momentum going.
Yeah, and it's hard, especially after you've thrown everything you've got into the first one and you're just kind of tired.
Dana, I'm going to, you know, just keep this moving along a little bit. What other books do you have that you've read, or books that you just have your eye on that you want to kind of devour next?
Right now I'm reading Being Mortal by Atul Gawande. I was so knocked out by the Checklist Manifesto that I wanted to read Being Mortal. Also, my book club picked it for this month, so I have to read it. It's basically about dealing with end of life. You know, and I'm sure it's going to be, you know, more from the physician's perspective, but I bet you it has a whole heck of a lot of things to say to people who are approaching, and also the baby boomers who are at this point, you know, their parents are approaching that stage. So there's that. What else am I reading? I can't remember the title of it, but I'm reading the story of the Indianapolis, which is the boat that took the bomb to Tinian so it could be dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And that's the boat that got bombed shortly thereafterwards. And sunk, and the guys were in the water and got eaten by sharks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, so I'm going through that book very slowly because I'm thinking I don't want to read that just before I go to bed at night. I really not going to do that. And then a book that I felt a little silly putting this book on this list because I think everybody's read it. I think I might have been the last person in the world to read this book. It's called The Boys in the Boat.
Actually, I haven't read that.
But you've heard of it.
I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah.
Same here.
Everybody
I haven't read it either.
Oh, man. Oh, guys. When we leave the studio, you are going, I'm telling you right now, to the store and to get this book. It's The Boys in the Boat. The full title is Nine Americans and Their Epic Quest for Gold at the 1936 Berlin Olympics. It's by Daniel James Brown. And it's about these kids in 1936 who were students at the University of Washington, and you're going to be surprised to hear this, but in fact, crewing, which is rowing, like eight people in one of those little teeny tiny boats with no freeboard, you know, like if you inhale, you're going to ship water. And they have big long oars and they scull and they go very fast. And back in the early 30s, the late 1800s and the early 1900s, this was like a big deal. This was, I mean, they were like the crew guys of the universities were like national heroes, like football guys are today, astonishingly. Anyway, but this is not just a book about these boys in the boat and their quest for gold. This is a book about the Depression There's more and better detail about the Depression in this book than I've read anywhere else, including many historical accounts, including any of the books that I read for American history when I was going to college. It's about Hitler using the Olympics to put a shine on the Third Reich. There's a lot about Leni Riefenstahl, who's the filmmaker, the extremely talented filmmaker that was basically his pet, who did, you know, Triumph of the Will and then did Olympia. And there's a lot about her as well. And it is a fascinating, riveting, page-turning portrait of a time and a place. At the heart of it is this guy named Joe Krantz. He's one of the boys in the boat. And it's about all the boys, but in particular, it's mostly about this boy. And I shouldn't call them boys. You know, they're all over 20. But he calls them the boys in the boat. So anyway, it's a look at the Depression through his eyes. He was abandoned by his father not once, but twice. You know, and in the middle of the Depression, you know, not even inarguably the nadir, the economic nadir of this nation. I mean, he had to figure out how to feed himself. You know, his classmates, when he finally got into UW, would make fun of his appetite because he would eat everything, you know, that was placed in front of him. And then he'd finish off his, you know, the guy sitting next to him, any food he had left on his plate, and they'd make fun of him. That is, you read that scene and you feel like you've been stabbed because he was hungry, you know, and he's known for years what it's like to be hungry. You know, he's just a kid and he's had to feed himself, like I said, for, you know, abandoned by his whole family. There's a whole backstory there as well. It is a marvelous book. It's probably the best book I read this year, I have to say. Yeah, I'm not kidding. It is really, really, really good. If somebody asked me for one book to give away as a gift for Christmas, that's it. I bet your dad would like it. We were talking before we were on the air. Quentin had give. You should tell that story.
Yeah. I gave I gave my dad a book by Stephen King. It is kind of goes into the JFK conspiracy, how JFK died a little bit. But it's very, I don't remember the title of the book, but I got it for him because he is of that era. He's of the JFK era. And as Dana kind of, you know, pointed out for me, he's the era that remembers where they were when JFK died. And he also loves Stephen King, as Terry does. But I just thought, put two and two together and decided I'd get it for him. I also I understand what you mean by having read a book recently that, you know, you feel like everybody's read and everybody's talked about forever. And you're just like, why am I just now getting to this? I did that with The Giver not too long ago. I was just like, well, I could not believe after I had gone through it. How, you know, how good it was and how, you know, middle school kids, high school kids are reading this book and I'm just now getting to it. And it's one of those dystopian novels that is just right up there with Anthem, Animal Farm. What else that I've read that? Oh, I can't remember the name of this. I'll come back to it later. But yeah, it's right up there. I'm also reading a book another one that has been out there for a while that is very famous. A friend just recommended it to me, in fact. The God of Small Things by Arundhati Roy. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing her name right, but it's basically telling the story of some twins living in India. And the, you know, she goes into the culture there, the you know, the third world things that shock the pants off of us that are just commonplace in that.
Us lucky people over here in the first world. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's incredibly. I've just started it actually, but her descriptions are beautiful. It's amazing the way she can. She just puts you in the setting of the town there. I believe it's pronounced Eminem, something like that. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to say, it's almost like there's too much description sometimes, but it's just perfect. And it's like me, myself, if I wanted to describe in writing my home, I could not do it the way she does it. It's she just really puts you into the setting. She really makes you feel like you can glimpse what the place looks like and feels like and smells like. And I love writing like that. Terry, you had something you wanted to chime in on.
I was going
to
say the title of that Stephen King book is the date of the Kennedy assassination, 11/23/63. Oh.
That is it. Exactly. 63. Have you read it?
No, I haven't. It's in my pile. like Quentin said, I've read a lot of Stephen King. It's one of the early things I started reading when I started reading. I just have a huge backlog of Stephen King because I've, you know, really haven't read any of his stuff in the last couple of years. I've been busy reading lots of other things outside of what used to be my comfort zone. So that is on the list of things to get to. And
Ms. Marvel.
Dana.
Okay, all right. for the record, out there in Radio Land, Terry's written down Ms. Marvel on his list.
And Showtime or Amazon or someone's doing a miniseries or something off of that Stephen King book.
Oh,
really?
James Franco is starring in it. Mm-hmm. Not that that's a reason to necessarily buy it or not, but is in the news
have
again.
Have you read it, Quentin? I mean, I know you gave it to your dad.
I haven't read it,
You haven't read it. Do you, either one of you know, is it his usual horror thing or is it a historical novel?
No, it's a historical kind of alternate history sort of thing. This guy goes back in time.
Oh.
That's the storyline. Mm. And that's about all that I know. Guy goes back in time, I think, to try to
stop it. Yeah.
I'm not sure. But it's not the typical horror thing. It's an alternate history type of thing.
Okay. I might be able to handle that. I've only ever read one Stephen King novel, The Shining, and I woke up in my bed at like 3 a.m. Well, I don't think I ever got to sleep that night at 3 a.m. waiting for my house to come alive around me. And I decided, okay, I didn't need to read any more Stephen King novels.
Talking about alternative history, and this might surprise you, Dana, knowing we've done these shows together a lot and what I read. I recently finished Philip K. Dick's Man in the High Castle.
Oh. Yeah, tell us what it's about.
It's basically an alternate history sort of thing. The Axis wins the Second World War. And so the eastern part of the United States is controlled by the Nazis. The West Coast is a sphere of influence for the Japanese. There's a little bit of area around the Rockies that is kind of a no man's land. And it's trying not to give away the story, but it involves some Americans who are just trying to, you know, live life and get by under this system. It involves some people who are trying to change. It's the title of the book is also the title of a fictional book within it. And there's a really, really, I did not see the twist coming at the end when one of the characters goes and meets the author of the fictional book. And
Philip K. Dick is better at screwing with your head than almost any other author out there.
And it's the first Philip K. Dick I've ever read.
Yeah.
I think I stumbled into it. I was looking up something else on the 15 for 15 list, and I kind of stumbled across this. And for a while, somewhere in my brain, I thought it was on the list, and it wasn't. But I read it, and it's like, wow. Yeah, and
you know, it's a series on Amazon now, right?
Yes.
A television series? Yeah.
Yes, Amazon Prime. It premieres next week.
Oh, I thought it was already on.
They've already aired the pilot.
I only ever saw the trailer, so yeah.
Yeah, they've already offered the pilot, and then like they do with all these online series, they toss it all out there at once, so you can binge watch it.
You going to watch it?
Yeah, I'll eventually get to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the plot twist kind of at the end, it's like, wow.
I think every single director in Hollywood wants to do a Philip K. Dick story. I mean, I think all of his books, and they were very short, all of them, are up for or have been up for some kind of film or television treatment. He's that Arnold Schwarzenegger film called Total Recall. That's a Philip K. Dick story, and I'm drawing a blank on what other ones were, but almost all of them. He's very filmable.
He just has the Midas touch.
He did.
Alternate history. Are either of you interested in historical fictions that, you know, follow history, but are kind of just, you know, because we don't know the full stories of the character, the individuals in history? Like what I'm kind of thinking about are a couple of books that, or not a couple of books, a couple of series by Con Eagleton that I read when I was, I believe, right about to go to college, right before college. There's the Emperor series. It's all about Julius Caesar and his, and all of the individuals that influenced his rise to power. And then there's also...
What's the name again?
The Emperor series.
No, the author.
The author, Con Eagleton, I-G-G-U-L-D-E-N. And he also wrote one about Genghis Khan, Genghis Khan's rise to power. And that one especially is extremely, well, for one, it's extremely bloody, but it's also extremely emotional, and the strategies, and it goes into the strategies that the Mongols used to take over the plains, at the plains, the steppe, and just, it's it goes into their international relationships with the Chinese, the relationships with the intertribal relationships. It's just, it was a fascinating read for me, and I loved it because it was simple, but hard to put, but still long, decently thick. And, but, the writing was simple, so you could just easily breeze through it. And it was hard, very hard to put down, very hard to put down. So that's how I went through all three books pretty quickly.
That's a hard to put down is probably the best thing you could say about any book.
We have a caller on line one, Celia. Hi, Celia. How are you doing?
Oh, hi. I'm enjoying your show. You guys are just great. But, you know, I'm somebody with a really terrible memory. I'm wondering if you guys would consider making a list on the website of some of your favorites, each of you.
Well, actually, Celia, what I do after every one of these shows is I will go ahead and I'm frantically taking notes down here as we are talking, and I'll make a list of all the books with authors mentioned, and I'll put them up on Stabenow.com.
Oh, fabulous tip. And I'm wondering if you've read these three books. The History of Love, I just think is a fabulous, fabulous book. I think it's Nicole Krauss, maybe.
Okay.
And it's just an amazing book with twists and turns. A guy who's lost his whole family in Poland during the war and comes to the U.S. and was supposed to meet this love of his life there. And by the time he finally gets to the U.S., she ended up getting married. And just kind of this, just what happens to this book that he ended up writing about her. It's just got fabulous twists and turns. And, of course, you probably all have read this, All the Light You Cannot See.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and that was World War II. Another one that just gives you the flavor of the time, just amazingly. Plus just, you know, wonderful little story about what that blind girl's dad did for her, making the model of the city, and just, you know, how the two people who are portrayed, how their storylines meet up.
It won the Pulitzer this year.
Did it?
Yeah.
Wow. Anyway, and of course, I'm thinking about, it's sitting on my husband's to-read pile, so I'm looking at Unbroken, another great story. But thanks for the show.
Thank you for calling in.
Okay.
Thank you, Celia.
Bye.
So, and also for anyone else who is wondering, Dana just said we are writing down all the books that we hear about on the show today, and Terry and I also have pen in hand, and we're scribbling down everything that comes out of this, especially the things Dana is saying.
And also, like Dana said, she'll have the list up on her website, stabenow.com, later today. We will link to that from our website, kbbi.org. Later today, and we'll also have the audio from this program up on our website.
That's a new thing that Terry told me about just before the show. I'm really excited about. So that means that anybody can go and just click on a link, and I'll put a link up to it on stabenow.com if Terry will send it to me.
As soon as I have it.
And you can guys can click through and just listen to it on sort of like you can listen to it on your phone if you want to.
Perfect. So I'm going to throw out one more book that I have read this year, and then I'm going to go back to you, Dana, because I want to hear some more of your recommendations. But some of our listeners might remember when Pink Martini came through town.
Their singer,
Storm Large, she has a book out. I interviewed her for a story here on KBBI. Anyone who got to speak with her knows that she has an extremely colorful personality.
If you were in the audience that night, oh my God, sorry.
So I knew any book written by her had to be something special. So got the book. It's a book about basically her life becoming a punk rock artist, and so some crazy times there. But also, it's mainly about her relationship with her mother, who suffered from severe mental illnesses. This was back in the 70s and 80s that she was diagnosed. So her mother got diagnosed with multiple mental illnesses. By the time she died, I think that it was still ambiguous what exactly her mother had. But what was really striking to me was the way that her stories about her mother and her relationship with her mother and the way her family had to kind of deal with her mother's situation mirrored a lot of the friends I have who have had family members who suffered from mental illnesses. And they're different stories, of course, but it seemed like the exact same circumstances. It's just it's a very emotional read.
Mm-hmm.
It's very easy to read, and the colorful personality shines through in all points of the book, but it was just another one of those books I could not put down, and you really connect with the story she's telling. It's like I said, very emotional.
Anybody who was in the auditorium that night is going to lunge for the. I mean, they must have a copy in the library. They must have at least one. I would think. God.
But
did you see the concert, Terry?
No, I didn't. Unfortunately, I had something else going on that.
Nothing else as good as that. Believe me. Let me tell you.
I know.
You should have caught you. It was. Mm-hmm. I've never heard music like that. I've never felt a stage presence like that. It's like they reached out and grabbed you by the throat. It was just. I mean, superb musicianship. I'm no kind of a musician. I know nothing, but I felt like I was floating about a foot above my seat. It was great. God, it was just, and you're right. She's just this larger than life personality, but they're all great. Remember
Absolutely.
The story about the little Greek guy?
Yeah, I did. He,
all
he
of them.
It kind of pulled your heartstrings a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. It was a fabulous concert. Anyway, that sounds interesting.
You should check it out.
Can you remember the
title? I didn't even say the title. It's called Crazy Enough.
Oh, excellent title. Oh, God, that comes under the heading of, oh, I wish I'd written that. Oh, God.
Crazy Enough by Storm Large.
Oh.
Dana, what else are you... do you have on in your sights for this year, or what else have you already read?
Well, another great book that I would recommend this year. It's going to take something to beat The Boys in the Boat, but I have to say that this ranked right up there. It's called Operation Mincemeat, How a Dead Man and a Bizarre Plan Fooled the Nazis and Assured an Allied Victory by Ben McIntyre. You're nodding. Churchill's mentioned in this book, so of course you've heard of it.
I haven't read the book, but I'm very familiar with the story. The Man That Never Was.
Yeah. Well, it's a movie.
Yeah.
And actually, I found out about this book because I saw the movie. It's up. It just started live streaming on Netflix here a couple months ago. And so I watched the film and I thought, well, there's more to that I want to read. So I scurried around and I found this book, Operation Mincemeat. Now, this is another extremely well-written book. And we're talking about World War here, and we're talking about a lot of people getting hurt and dying. So, okay. I don't want to say this is a funny book, but there are many, many funny parts to this book. It is an extremely, another one of those page-turning, really amusing reads. This all starts with British intelligence, and what they're trying to do is to fool the Nazis into thinking that they're not, in fact, going to invade Sardinia. As McIntyre says, anybody with an atlas knows certainly that they're going to do. They're trying to fool the Nazis into thinking that they're going to go ashore in Greece, and I forget where else, but not in Sardinia, which is obviously where they're going to go. So they find a body, they put a bunch of dispatches on it referring to the fact that they are going to land in Greece and wherever it was, and they float the body ashore in Spain, in Nazi-occupied Spain. And in the hopes that it's going to go to Abwehr, which I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, that's the German equivalent of the Secret Service, and convince high command, that the German high command, that in fact they're not going to be invading Sardinia, with the hope that the Germans will move their troops to somewhere else so that the Allies, when they do invade Sicily, not Sardinia, sorry, will face less opposition. It worked like a charm. It even got kicked up as far as Hitler and worked. And Churchill had to sign off on it, you know. And the British intelligence people had a really hard time selling this because nobody thought it would work. Everybody thought that the Germans would see through it. There were a very few Germans who did see through it, but theirs were not the loudest voices and not the highest up. So that's the story in brief, but there's a lot more that goes on to it, as you can imagine. And one of the greatest things about this story is that the guys who thought up this idea and the guys who implemented this idea, including the head of British intelligence in Madrid, were all of them, wait for it, writers. Yes! It's true. Every word of it is true. It's just astonishing to me. I kept turning the page and going, this can't possibly be right. This can't possibly be right. But yes, in fact, it is. It is a tremendous story. Operation Mincemeat by Ben McIntyre. I totally, totally recommend it.
Dana, was Ian Fleming, the author of the James Bond novel,
he was in this, up to his neck. He was in it up to his neck.
Because I know
he
worked for British intelligence during the war.
Yep. Yes, yes, he is. Yes, he's front and center here.
I think we have another big hitter.
I'm so sorry,
from
honey.
Dana. I have another one.
You're just not even going to have time to, you know, work when I'm done with you.
We have a couple of callers on the line who have been waiting. First, for line two, we have Bumpo.
Yeah, good morning. Very good show as usual. I just want to recommend a book I just read, got from the library in the new shelf, The Girl in the Spider's Web, the new Lisbeth Salander novel by the, you know, continuing the series by the late, great Stieg Larsson. Great books, and I'm usually very leery about some other writer taking over somebody's series, especially one so great. And but I think this really did it. I was surprised. David Lagercrantz is the new author of the series, and Stieg Larsson may be dead, but Lisbeth Salander, if anybody's read the books, I mean, what an incredible character. She lives on, and it's a very good book. I really enjoyed it. So that's, I just want to recommend that.
Thank you very much, Bumpo, and we're going to have that recommendation up on our website, and Dana's going to put it up on hers, too. We also have on line one, Rick.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Quentin. Yeah, this is Rick. I, you know, the fascinating book/DVD that we got through the Great Courses was one in particular that you guys have mentioned about the Mongol Empire, but they have a course, it's called The Barbarian Empires of the Steppes. It's totally fascinating. You get a book and the DVD, but it's just, you know, you can't stop till it's done. And we found that the Great Courses have a lot of fascinating reads, as well as the visual lectures by the various professors, you know, world-class professors on each of the different types of courses that they provide. And then there's another one that's really fascinating. It's called Brunelleschi's Dome, and it reads about the how this watchmaker put a bid in to build the world's largest cupola, which is a dome over a church, and it was literally, it still is, the world's biggest cupola that is made out of bricks. They didn't use any braces, and they didn't just build one dome, they built a double dome, and it's amazing how this fella, Brunelleschi, you know, had to invent special winches and as well as other tools to make this happen. But he came up with this idea that would allow them to build the dome without having any supports below. And so it was actually referred to me by a friend of ours, this gal Carla, that she was so fascinating and fascinated by it. She's read it more than once and has taken friends of hers up through it. It takes place in it happened in Florence, Italy. So, anyways, those are two things to. Oh, and actually, the author's name is Ross King. Bernalecci's Dome.
Ross King. Well, if there's one thing I love, Rick, it is a how-to book. Thank you for that recommendation.
Yeah, thank you for the coffee table. It's really great. Thank you, Dana.
Thanks for calling in, Rick. So you have one now.
Well, I always do. I mean, that's the only bad thing about this show is that I always go home with a big long list. You should see my to-read shelf already. God.
Well, anything we can do to make you feel a little bit more guilty about what you haven't read.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
So we have next on line three, Teresa.
Hello.
Hi, Teresa. Am I saying that right?
Yes. Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
Is this Teresa's on, Mark?
Yes, it is.
Excellent. The 15 and 15 lady.
Yeah. I've been, we tried at the Home Republic Library last year. We launched a reading challenge called 15 and 15. I heard, I think Carrie mention it earlier, and we weren't sure what it was going to be like or if it was going to be popular or a terrible idea or whatever. Well, it turned out that it's been a lot of fun, and a lot of people have been participating, and I just wanted to let people know that we're in the process of compiling a list for 2016, and now I'm thinking that there might have to be a KBBI coffee table category on the list. I'm getting a lot of great ideas here, so thanks. And I'd love to hear, both Terry and Dana have been participating in it, and I would love to mention that a lot of the books that have come up in conversation have been books on that list, and so that's been fun. It's kind of been this great way to have a community conversation about, different books that people are reading. I think Operation Mincemeat might make the next one as
you
well.
You won't be sorry, and nobody, no one who read it will be either.
I
read The Boys in the Boat because it was on the 15 and 15 list. That's where I got it.
That's great. And, Ms. Marvel was on the list. In fact, I just read it.
I did not know Ms. Marvel was on the list.
It is. It's on the list. And we'll probably put the next installment on the 2016 list. But anyhow, I would encourage anybody who loves to read to take a look at the Homer Public Library website and under the 15 and 15 category, and you can see the books that are on the list for this year. And just keep your eyes open for the stuff that's coming up for next year.
It was, I have to say, Teresa, I think this was a brilliant idea. It got me to read a whole bunch of books that I wouldn't ordinarily have picked out for myself. Celia mentioned All the Light You Cannot See. I read that because it was on the list. Also because it was a book club book, and my personal book club book, I admit. But I read, what was that one? Books that were award winners that I didn't even know, that I'd never heard of before. I forget the one about the recession that won the National Literary Book Award, I think it was. I can't remember. Anyway, I loved the fact that there were so many different kinds of books and different categories of books, and I tried really hard to pick something from each category. Although Terry's sitting across the table from me looking, no poetry. But I'm going to work on him for between now and next year. I'm going to get him to read a poem. Because for one thing, Terry, mostly they're short.
Okay.
That's true, they're short.
Earlier in the hour, I just got done telling you about reading 2,200 pages on Theodore Roosevelt summer, so
I know.
I'm not afraid
I know you
of
go
length.
For the long read, yes.
Boring. I'll play Terry. No, give me that look. it's all in fun.
Anyway, it's just, I think it was a terrific idea, and I'm looking forward to participating next year. And I also understand, Teresa, I didn't make it to the Thursday gathering, but I understand that you're going to get the people who are participating together more often next year. Is that correct?
Well, that's what people expressed an interest in doing that. And I you know, I would love to. What I thought when I was creating this book challenge program, I was thinking, you know, a lot of people that read don't like to go out and do things, and so I wanted to create, or you know, we're kind of homebodies, some of us, and so I wanted to create a program that people could participate from without ever having to leave their house, except for maybe to go to the bookstore or to the library. but it turned out, you know, the people who showed up on Thursday night, we ended up having this great discussion, you know, an hour and a half discussion of a lot of different books, and people exchanged ideas and recommendations, and everybody was overwhelmingly in favor of doing that more often. And so I'm happy to oblige, because it was a lot of fun.
You know why I missed it, Teresa?
Why is that?
I was home reading and I lost track of time.
Yeah, thus proving my point about book people. Anyhow, I'll go now, but thanks for mentioning 15 and 15, and it's been a lot of fun, and like I said, I'm very good from this program, so thanks for all of the suggestions.
Thank you so much for calling in, Teresa.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye. And we have one last caller on line two, David.
Good morning.
Hello, David. Good morning.
Good morning. I've been listening to your show, and it's been I'm glad it's going to be posted online, because I can't write fast enough. But but I do want to make a recommendation, and there's kind of a little story behind this. This is actually last summer's read, not this year's, and I loaned it out to a friend of mine, so I kind of lost track of the book, and we went up to visit. We live up in Esther, and I saw the book laying there, and I said, oh, there's my book. And I started reading while I was visiting, and long story short, I couldn't stop, and I read it again. It's a nonfiction account of the end of the Comanche Indians. It's called Empire of the Summer Moon by a journalist from Texas his initials are S.C. Gwynn. And I tell you what, you start it, you won't put it down. It's nonfiction, fascinating, and it's just a story that I knew nothing about. But the way it's written, it's almost like, well, it just draws you in, and you want to find out what happens. And the central figure in the book is Connah Parker, who was half white, half Comanche. His mother got captured by the Comanche Indians, so it follows her and his story to the end of his life. It's a fascinating read. So I thought I'd put that out there. Empire of the Summer Moon.
All right.
S.C. Gwynn.
Yeah. We've got it down.
All right. Very good. Thanks for the show.
Thanks for calling, David.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, and this list just keeps getting longer and longer.
Oh, don't say it like that.
We have about 8 minutes left, or 7 minutes left in the show. I'm going to throw out one more book that I think is just an awesome read. I admit I haven't finished this book yet. I kind of went through, I want to say, the first couple of chapters, and it's on my guilty need to finish list. But it is Your Fat What Does Not Belong Here. Let me see. I have it written down. Where is it? Yes. Well, it's called it's something along the lines of Your Fat What Does Not Belong Here, or Is Not Welcome Here. And it's basically written by a woman who has collected a ton of stories from people in the Middle East who are, you know, doing their own, in their own way, taking a stand against Islamic fundamentalism. And it's fascinating. There's people who are risking their lives, people who are just maybe not risking their lives, but are going against the norm, the social mores, because that is the number one religion in the Middle East. But people who are just saying enough is enough with violence, intimidation from Islamic fundamentalists. And I thought it was an extremely, you know, great book, just because, of course, that personal, personal stories are very
intense. Is it a series of essays?
It's it's more like a series of interviews that she has with people that she traveled. She hopped around countries in the Middle East, and she interviewed people, or got eyewitness accounts of people, you know, standing up to fundamentalists. And it's one of those stories, or they are, it's many stories, but it's a story that isn't really told very often, or when it is told, isn't done.
The headlines from the Middle East is always something blowing up or somebody being beheaded.
Exactly.
Sounds like something you would want to read as an alternative narrative, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, and that's what drew me to it, and why it's also why I feel so guilty for not finishing it yet.
You put it out there. You started the rest of us reading, and that's good enough.
Dana, or actually, we're going to go to Terry. I have more for you, but Terry, I think you have a couple more that you've
real quick, because I know we're running short on time.
We always do.
Under the Banner of Heaven, Story of Violent Faith, John Krakauer. Wow, that just blew me away. It's a part history, part current time story on a sect of the Mormon faith that still practices polygamy and those sorts of things that the church has disavowed also. Real interesting. And another, my last recommendation of this show, Those Angry Days by Lynn Olson, Roosevelt, Lindbergh, and America's Fight Over World War II, 1939 to 1941.
Lynn Olson.
Thank you. She also wrote a book on Edward R. Murrow and the Murrow Boys, titled The Murrow Boys. In this book, nobody comes out looking good. FDR doesn't come out looking good. Lindbergh doesn't come out looking good. It's just... wow. Roosevelt kept on waiting for public opinion to lead him. And even after public opinion turned, he still didn't want to admit it. Lindbergh, part of the American First movement and the isolationist. If Roosevelt was guilty of all the things Lindbergh claimed he was, Lindbergh would have been tried for treason. Personally, he may very well should have been anyways. Just nobody looks good in this leading up to World War II. Just an absolutely fascinating read.
You know, one of the books I read when I was really young, I was in the Soldovia Public Library. It's called We by Charles Lindbergh, and it's about him flying, across the Atlantic for the first time, first guy to cross the Atlantic on the plane. And I loved that book, and I loved him for doing it. And he was just this golden hero in my eyes because of this. And then come to find out that he's this horrific anti-Semite, and, pacifist, not necessarily a bad thing, but as you say, many of his activities, I find out over the years, have been treasonous. And it's, it is an object lesson in just how many different people can reside in the same body.
But I do have to say this about Lindbergh, even though I personally believe he was wrong, he never apologized for anything he did.
Yeah, the courage of his convictions.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I give him credit for that.
But he was totally wrong.
Absolutely.
Before we wrap this up, I just have one question I want to ask you, Dana. As an author, do you have any advice for anybody who is, has the bug, the itch to write their own book or their own work? It doesn't have to be a book. Or anyone who is currently working on some kind of writing. Any advice? Anything that you would suggest that they keep their mind on?
Write every day. I don't care if it's just a sentence a day. I don't care if it's a paragraph a day. You write every day. By the end of the month, you've got a chapter. By the end of the year, maybe you've got a book, but you just have to write every day. Books don't write themselves. You have to write every day. I mean, it's all about the butt in the chair in front of the computer, hands on the keyboard. You got to write every day. Like I said, I don't care how little. You just have to write every day.
Got you. Very simple, very direct, and...
it's not that simple, but it's pretty, you'd be amazed. There are just tons of people out there. It's not necessarily the best writers who get published, Quentin. Mm-hmm. It's the people who finish.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for that. That book I was talking about is Your Fatwa Does Not Apply Here. So I was close. We are finishing up here on the coffee table. We have Dana Stabenow here and Terry Rensel, our program director. I'm Quentin Chandler. Thanks for joining us here on KBBI.
All the books, all the authors will be up on stabenow.com and kbbi.org.
Thanks for reminding me. We'll have it online. Go online. All right. Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is coming up next. Stay tuned.